everybody, welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Chetty.
How's it, guys?
Right, let's jump straight into the news. Robin, you have some news about load shedding, or rather the cost of load shedding last year.
Unsurprisingly, load shedding kind of mired the end of 2019. And the CSIR, which is the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in South Africa, actually did a study and came together with a report estimating how much load shedding cost the South African economy last year. And it doesn't make for good reading. They estimated, or at least the minimum cost, was around about 59 billion. But at the highest point, as it were, it could have cost as much as 118 billion to the South African economy. So yeah, Eskom really screwed with us in 2019. I think also one of the more interesting aspects of the report itself, they chatted about South Africa's declining energy availability factor, which essentially means the amount of power plants that are actually able to generate electricity. And since 2001, we're sitting at 90%, and that's now gone down to 67% during 2019. So it's not looking good at all.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just from what the CSIR has looked at. I mean, I trust their figures and all that sort of stuff, but I mean, there could be loads more. I mean, just thinking about stuff like your food bill when the freezer goes down, and all that sort of stuff. It must be quite a lot more than that, I'm sure.
And that's obviously depending what Eskom is willing to disclose. We don't know exactly what they're hiding either. Yeah, so it's not looking good.
Cool.
Everything is bad.
Moving on to slightly better news, well, better for Netflix at least. The streaming service revealed its Q4 2019 earnings, and things were actually pretty good. Their revenue for the quarter came to $5.4 billion, and that figure was helped along by a total of 8.76 million new paying subscribers. Interestingly, in that regard, the largest portion of those subscribers are international. Growth in the US and Canada actually seems to be slowing, but that does make a degree of sense given how long Netflix has been in those regions compared to other regions. So they are actually doing pretty well. They do expect figures to drop in the next quarter, well, quarter one of 2020, due to churn and pricing changes and that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's to be expected. What will be interesting to see is what these figures will look like next year, or this year rather, especially with services like Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus becoming more widespread. And being available in more territories, it would be interesting to see how Netflix performs at the end of 2020 compared to last year. But yeah, good year for Netflix so far. Well, 2019, rather, was a good year for Netflix. Clinton, you've got some news about some game delays.
Mine's less promising. There's been another game delayed. This time it's Dying Light 2. It's a bit different from the other games that have been delayed because it didn't actually have a release date that can be pushed back. It had a release period, that being spring 2020. That's the US spring. They've announced it's been delayed, but they haven't said at all when it's coming out. A lot of games have been delayed lately. Cyberpunk 2077, Square Enix's Avengers game, Iron Man VR, The Last of Us Part 2. Just a lot of games are getting delayed at the start of this year. The theory right now is that all these delays are because of the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. That's still a terrible name. The theory a lot of people share right now is that these developers aren't necessarily pushing their games back to the end of the year when these two consoles are planned to come out. They are pushing them back so they can kind of get the dev platform so they can make these games cross-generational. So when they can release the games later this year, and then maybe in 2021, early 2021, they can put their games out on that console as well. And, you know, it's hard to fault them on that. They're not double dipping, really. They're just kind of, they're trying to get their game on as many platforms as possible. And I'm sure a lot of early adapters for the new consoles will be thankful that there's a larger amount of games that come out. And if that isn't why these delays are happening, it's just because the games need more time in the oven. You know, there might not be any underlying reason other than the developer or the publisher or whoever underestimated how much time was needed, and these games just need more work to get out. I really love Dying Light 1. I think it's one of the best zombie games released in the last 10 years or so. A lot of people say it's the best zombie game released in the last decade. So all I can really recommend is that if you haven't played the first Dying Light game, go pick it up. It's very cheap on all platforms and it goes on sale often. And strangely enough, the developers still update that game. It came out years and years ago. I can't remember that. Oh, 2015, I remember now. It came out in 2015 and the developers are still updating it. It got its last content drop in December, so just last month. So give Dying Light 1 a look while you wait for Dying Light 2 and all those other games that are coming out much later in the year.
Cool. So now we're going to move on to some more gaming news, I guess. And I'm going to talk about one of my favorite games, which is Destiny 2. But I want to talk about one of the best aspects of Destiny 2, and that's secrets. If you've played Destiny 2, you will likely know of two weapons that were released as a secret, as in Bungie didn't tell the community that they were releasing these weapons or these items, and the community just had to go out and find them. One of those weapons is Whisper of the Worm, the other is Outbreak Perfected, and in Destiny 1, that weapon was Outbreak Prime. So last week, Tuesday, Destiny 2 players logged in, and one of the NPCs, whose name is Osiris, he's a character that's been coming in and out of the lore for quite some time now. He's here to stay for the current season, which is Season of the Dawn, but he had a quest for players that put them back into an area called the Corridors of Time. And the Corridors of Time are essentially Destiny's time travel MacGuffin. So players can enter this area, and there were certain messages, or missions rather, where players went into the past or they went into the future and they did something. It's a clever little concept, nice little way. It's a really pretty area. It's just the stark white infinite stretch of space that just looks really great. And we went back in there last week, and players discovered that there was a mission that you had to explore the Corridors of Time. That was all that was given to players. It was soon discovered that there were certain paths that you could take within these corridors, earmarked by symbols in front of doorways. And if you went through a certain path following these symbols, you discovered lore cards, which give you a bit of context into Destiny's story and the wider universe. These codes were found on seasonal objects called obelisks scattered throughout the Destiny map. There's four of them in total, and each hour a different set of symbols was displayed. And those symbols were a combination of what came to be known as Clover, Diamond, Snake, Hex, and Plus. And following these paths would yield you lore cards and ultimately an emblem. These codes changed every hour, so for the first 19 hours, Destiny 2 players were following these codes, trying to find the correct paths through the Corridors of Time to get the lore and ultimately a emblem, which you can equip on your character, and it makes it's just a nice little, hey, I went through this huge thing. Now, once players had acquired the emblem, there was something else. In the room where you, or the end of the path, essentially, there's a room where there is a grave in the middle and a huge set of hexagons above you. And if you interacted with this area, a reflection of the roof would appear in the floor that would have a number of these symbols. And players quickly realized that each of these symbols was different to every player, and it would change every hour. So the Destiny community realized that, hey, maybe there's something to this. And a couple of people started putting together these symbols and found that some of them matched and that they started to form a sort of path. So a call was issued to the Destiny community by streamers, people that run Destiny subreddits, and just folks on Twitter to take screenshots of these symbols that they were seeing in this final room in the Corridors of Time and submit them to a central database. And then became what was affectionately known as the Season of the Spreadsheet. So streamers got onto Twitch and started transcribing all these images that were being submitted by the community into one massive spreadsheet. Then you had people who were sitting down going through the spreadsheet looking for matching pairs, looking for duplicates, getting rid of the duplicates. And then there were other people that were taking that that transcribed data and turning it into a visual map. So ultimately, after all of this, we discovered that there was a map, and there were thousands of pieces. It was at the end of the day, there were, I think, 5,040 pieces, unique pieces that needed to be put together to form a map. And it was one of the most incredible things to watch. All these unique images being submitted by streamers, by players of the game, by people in the community. I mean, I submitted a few of my own, hoping to help with this effort. And on Monday, the map was completed. And a path through the Corridors of Time was drawn. And everybody was super excited to find out what the big reward at the end of this tedious mission was. Now, when I say tedious, I mean that it took 6 days to create this map of finding unique images, putting them together, collating all the data, and then creating a final map. And the payoff was a bit of a disappointment. So if you don't want to know what it is, I recommend just skipping ahead here. But if you do want to know, then carry on listening. So the reward for this gargantuan effort was an exotic weapon called Bastion. So, I mean, that's cool, but the problem that the community has is that this weapon was announced in the Season of Dawn roadmap. So essentially what happened, to sum up rather nicely, and one of the streamers, T-Rex, actually said it, was that we went through time to get an exotic early and brought it back to the present. Which is cool in a sense, but I want to talk a bit about why I think Bungie missed the mark here. So if you look at one of the most well-received missions in the game, which is the Whisper of the Worm, the entire thing was secret. Somebody literally stumbled across a portal on a planet that transported them into a mission, and they had 20 minutes to complete this mission, and they had no idea what to do. The community then came together, determined what to do, and it was quickly discovered that one of the best weapons in Destiny history was actually now in Destiny 2. And that was great, because it was completely secret. It was a complete surprise from Bungie to the players of the game. And Bastion, or the Corridors of Time puzzle, had those same echoes. But this time, there was a bit more community involvement. And unfortunately, it was for a weapon that we already knew was coming, which a lot of people have criticized. I do think that there was a bit of a letdown, and that Bungie should have probably kept the weapon secret along with the mission. And yeah, the thing for me though is that the puzzle was done fantastically. I think that it required immense community effort and immense coordination from the Destiny 2 community, and for Bungie to take a risk like this is pretty insane, because the only way that this puzzle works and can be solved is if there are a large enough group of people playing the game. Like, I know I say that there were 5,040 pieces in total, but those unique pieces were sort of time gated. So essentially, you only got one unique puzzle piece a day on your first day, a second or two on your second day, three on your third day, four, and so on and so forth. So ultimately, over time, the unique pieces would be discovered just by the fact of if one person just kept going into the corridors, they'd be able to find the path. But the way that Bungie presented this, it required immense community participation, and I think that they hit that out of the park. I do hope to see more missions like this, because I think the whole air of mystery and the fact that Destiny 2 is a very mysterious game in and of itself by virtue of Bungie not really explaining things in game, I think that it's really cool to have stuff like this, but then to get to the end and know that, oh, it was something we could have just waited 2 weeks for, is a bit of a letdown. So I just want to say thanks to all the community that helped with this, the streamers that worked over 6 days, Chevy, Vendetta, Frank UK, Glad, Zoe, Fami, Clyde, Sweatsicle, Lono, Evan, and then the teams that helped collate the data with Corridors Inc., Team Ninji, Zycor, Marsh, Team Explorers, Team Raid Secrets, and the Cat Army, and then of course the various Discord channels, Reddit, the Raid Secrets Reddit. It was just fantastic to see all these people within the community coming together to try and solve this puzzle. So Bungie, if you're listening, I don't think you are, but if you are, more puzzles like that, please, but keep the rewards a secret.
But so, yeah. Brendan, yeah. I want to ask you something. You know, I think if you say it took 6 days to do, people are like, oh, well, that's not too long. But the amount of man hours must have been ridiculous. So, I don't think there's any way to track that, but it must have
Streamers that I watched, so I'm just going to focus on Lono, Glad, Sweatical, and Chevy, who were the four main streamers that I watched. Between them, I think they got a total of 6 hours of sleep over the 6 days. But I don't feel bad for them, because they made bank through subscriptions and bit donations and gifted subs. So they benefited from this, but yeah, they got no sleep. The amount of man hours is I can't even begin to guess what went into this solving this puzzle.
Yeah, it's crazy. I wonder if Bungie actually has those numbers on their servers somewhere.
I hope they do. The community is actually calling for an AMA with the developers of this puzzle, because it's immense and it's pretty amazing how it all came together. So, yeah, if there's more developments on the Corridors of Time puzzle and Bastion's reward thing, I'll definitely write that up. But yeah, cool little puzzle from Bungie. We're gonna skip forward now to Naked Insurance. Robin, these are the guys that did pay-as-you-go car insurance.
You know, they specialize in, AI-driven insurance products. They launched in April of 2018, so they haven't been around, compared to your larger insurance companies for that long. But now they're branching out into home insurance covers. So I got a chance to chat to one of their co-founders, Ernest North, and we just discussed what the advantages are of having, an artificial intelligence driven insurance platform, kind of what their plans are for the future, and what consumers can look forward to in the coming months. So, yeah.
Cool. We'll be right back after this interview.
Hi, this is Robin Lincetti reporting for Hypertext, and joining me today is Ernest North. Ernest is co-founder of Naked Insurance, and today we're discussing a rather large announcement for the company. Earlier this week, they announced that they are moving into the home insurance field. Those that are aware of Naked might know that they are involved in car insurance, and specifically AI-driven solution for car insurance, and now they're moving into the home insurance field. So first of all, Ernst, thanks for joining us. Much appreciated.
Thanks so much. Nice to be here.
Great stuff. So I guess the first thing to find out, obviously Naked's had quite a lot of success in terms of car insurance and kind of bringing something new to the market. What was the decision to perhaps move into the home insurance field? Why not perhaps something else, maybe life insurance, for example?
it's certainly something that's been on the cards for a long time. In our planning for rolling out the different products, buildings and contents, insurance and insurance for your valuable items has always been the natural next step after car insurance. We are amazed and really grateful for the success that we've had over the last 18 months and sort of confirmation of the idea and the extent to which people have taken up our product. But there's been a lot of people that prefer to have their car insurance and their home insurance and the insurance for their contents or their buildings in one place.
Sure.
And it's also something that traditionally a lot of providers give you a good deal if you have those things combined. We'll talk about those deals in a little bit. But it's something that's traditionally been bought together. And so while we've had a lot of success over the last 18 months, it was always the plan to get to this point where we could launch the full product suite and serve people in a single place and to use this as the basis, as the product that we go more mainstream with.
Perfect. We'll get, I guess, to the nitty-gritty of the product itself, but I think what might be more interesting first up is just in terms of the AI-driven nature of the solution. Can you just perhaps explain a little bit for us, kind of what are the advantages there?
So I guess the first thing to say is that the actual insurance cover that you get is not significantly different to what people are used to.
Sure.
Like you want to get covered for a certain number of things that can go wrong, and the actual legal stuff behind the scenes is almost identical to what you're used to. You are covered for those things. Where the real difference lies is the way in which technology translates into three benefits. The first one is the convenience of you being able to do everything instantly without ever speaking to a call center.
Mm.
So the convenience of getting your insurance quote in 90 seconds, and if you like it, customizing it, changing your excess, whatever, and giving us your payment details and your cover starting without you ever speaking to somebody is really big, and people are really enjoying that. The second big benefit from that technology is because everything is automated, we have cut out a lot of costs from the system compared to traditional insurance providers.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only are you cutting out the cost of the agent that speaks to you, but we've also cut out the cost of traditional processes that get done manually. So monthly finance activities and a whole bunch of stuff that traditional insurance companies have to do manually and which costs them a lot of money. We've automated those things, and those savings go directly to premium reductions. That's the main reason why premiums are so much lower. But thirdly, the one of the parts that I'm really proud about that this technology has enabled is the removal of a whole bunch of unnecessary processes and a whole bunch of unnecessary back and forth that you used to have in the past with insurance. The main one is this negotiation on premium. In the past, an insurer would offer you a price, you would sort of pretend like you're not going to take it, or you would pretend like you're going to leave, and then they reduce the price a little bit, and you never know whether you're paying the best price. Like there's always this thing hanging over your head as to, did I negotiate enough? And what we're really proud of is the fact that our technology now just removes all of that, just transparently gives you the best price possible right from the beginning. And that's what you pay. If you like it, take it. And that sort of, for me, signals not just convenience and cost saving. It signals a new generation of transparency and just removing the nonsense.
Sure. You kind of mentioned the removing the nonsense, and there's a lot of, I guess, the human intervention or contact that's been removed. I want to find out that obviously this kind of offering is targeted to perhaps a younger age bracket, but there are obviously a lot of South Africans that still want that human contact when they're actually dealing with something that's important like insurance.
Mm.
Is that something that you guys have had to cater to or kind of fine-tune over the past 18 months? Is it something you have to still think about?
Mm. It's a really good question. I mean, let me first say that the thing is completely self-service, and there are very few interactions where you can't get everything done without on your own without speaking to us. But the reality is that every now and then you have questions.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to in-app chat support, you can send us a mail, you can chat to us there. And if you really have a big question that you want to hear a human's voice, then yes, you can phone the support line and chat to them. They're not going to sell you an insurance policy. They're not going to give you a quote. If you want to do that, then you have to do that on the app. Mm. But they are there to support if you have questions. So there is that human element. And of course, there's 24/7 emergency human support. So if you're stuck on the side of the road and you need to be towed, or your geyser has burst or something like that, for that, you have 24-hour support in the conventional way. So via the app, you can call the actual emergency support line. But to get back to your earlier question in terms of age, it is interesting to me that our experience over the last 18 months has certainly proven that age is not such a restricting factor. Sure, there is a slight bias towards people between 25 and 30. That is where the bulk of our clients are. But I'm very pleasantly surprised by the number of 40, 50, 60-year-olds that feel comfortable using our platform because they use Uber. They used Airbnb. They book their holidays online. They do their banking on the app. Why not do their insurance this way? And yes, insurance is a big decision, but what we've really invested in big time is to make the experience and the interface one that it gives you comfort. Like, it very clearly explains what's going on. And even though insurance is a big decision, we worked really hard at making it so easy to understand in the app that you feel, yeah, they've told me everything, and I know more about this now than I would have known if I'd spoken to a call center. So why not buy insurance like this? It's convenient. It takes me a minute. I don't have to speak to a call center. So I'm pleasantly surprised that there have been much more people of older ages than I had expected. So that's a good thing. Do we think the majority of 60-year-olds will eventually insure with us? No. I think the traditional broker model is more suited. The more you are used to technology, the more suited you are to our product. But I don't think age is a primary driver.
Well, I think it's a quite interesting point because, say, for example, home insurance. That is something, being a homeowner is something that you associate more with your 30 to 40, 40 to 50 age group. So I'm assuming that now this opens up new avenues for Naked.
Yes, I also think it's worth saying that our focus really is more on home contents insurance than on buildings.
Sure.
We do insure buildings, and so we have a whole number of people that have insured their buildings with us already, and that product works. But as you say, spot on, there's a more bias towards people that are slightly older that actually own homes. So where we are seeing very good early traction is in the, let's call it, 300,000 Rand home contents policy. That is the sweet spot for us, really, for the sort of typical 32-year-old that is comfortable doing everything on his or her phone, have not bought insurance in the past because it feels expensive or it's a hassle or whatever, and you think, I only have 300,000 worth of stuff. What are the chances of all of it being wiped out in one go? And historically, that profile's premium would have felt very expensive with traditional insurers. And one of the big reasons is because a big portion of that premium covers overheads, covers the expenses of the insurers. And because our platform our technology basically is free or zero marginal cost for every extra policy that we sell, we just charge for the cost of covering the risk. And so that cost of the 200,000-300,000 Rand worth of cover for a 32-year-old is 80-90 Rand with us on average.
Yeah.
Obviously, depending on risk profile, but on average, unthinkably lower than what they would pay with a conventional insurer. So that's the market that I'm really excited about.
Perfect. You mentioned some of the policies there, and I'm assuming everything is still underwritten by Hollard.
Yes.
Perfect. I guess that kind of brings me to my next question. And just in terms of the ability, the when and where of people actually engaging, how's this working? So is the product relevant now?
Yes. So the product is live. We recognize that the biggest driver in terms of price for people to understand whether they are going to be able to save or not is car insurance. So what we said is you don't have to download the app to get a car insurance quote. You can buy car insurance. If you are only looking for car insurance, you can do that direct on the website.
Mm-hmm.
However, our buildings and contents and cover for your valuable things is only on the app. So the easiest process is actually just to download the app. If you just want to check out your car insurance price, you can do that on the website. But the easiest, best process and what our business is optimized for is to do it on the app. And I think that's a very important word, because increasingly over the last year or two, and you will no doubt see more of those, you see old school businesses that come up with the line that they also have an app. And that's cute, but the experience makes it very clear that this was an add-on. Like, their core business processes were clearly designed to do business in a different way. Like, and so it is very seldom that everything you need to do, you can do on the app without speaking to a call center. In the majority of cases, whatever your use case is, you will end up speaking to the call center again. And so we are really proud that our business has been built primarily and exclusively for you to do this on the app. Like, it, the whole experience of quoting on for different things, putting it in the basket, managing it like an e-commerce journey, seeing, okay, my total premium across all my things is 800 Rand. No, I don't have that much money. Let me take off cover for the cell phone. Let me increase the excess on this item. The premium changes. Like, all of it is done dynamically. And that whole e-commerce journey, you can feel, has been designed to happen on our app. And that's why our experience feels so much different.
Perfect. So we're correct in saying that Nick is very much a mobile first kind of experience.
It's almost a mobile only experience. Technically, you can do a car insurance quote on your desktop. It works, but we've not been optimized for that. Like, the real juicy product experience, the best product experience you certainly get when you're in the app.
Perfect. And I guess it's worthwhile talking about perhaps the lessons you've learned for the past 18 months. What can you kind of learn from, working in the car insurance field and now branching off into home insurance? Are there any lessons you perhaps learned and looked to integrate into this version now?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. There are lots of those learnings which we have taken to heart over the last 18 months and incorporated. Still many things that we want to keep learning. We certainly see this as a start of a journey of building a big insurance business. But I mean, examples of the things that have been incorporated now is, as I said, this basket functionality, which is something we didn't have in the past. You had to manually buy for each item and then go buy for the next item. But this whole basket functionality is something we've invested a lot because we saw people struggling with that in the car insurance space. There are other features like we are an app-based platform, and so actually traditional paperwork or traditional versions of you getting a PDF of your document feels outdated. It doesn't feel relevant to our business because you can change your cover live. Mm-hmm. So to get a PDF of what your cover describes or describing your cover doesn't really feel right, because on the days that I'm not driving my car, I press one button and then I switch to a different cover type, and then I'm paying less for those days. So a PDF saying what I'm covered for is not really applicable to our business. However, we did learn that, for example, when buying a car or when buying a house, it is important to get that PDF document because your bank wants to see it. Sure. And so we've integrated that into the app now. It's really easy to open your app, press a couple of buttons, take a couple of pictures, and it actually generates that PDF document that serves as proof of insurance to your bank. And then I guess another exciting thing, which really is at the core of our business, is the AI. And for one of the things that we're increasingly implementing in our business is the use of data sources that traditional businesses would never use. Mm-hmm. And to use those things to alter the core value proposition of how we serve our clients. And so an example of this is when you're on the app and you are answering questions, we are not just storing the data of the actual answers you give. We are storing data of every single little micro interaction that you have on the app. So we are storing, for example, that you seem to have been unsure about that question. So we must remember to, like, you hovered on that question for longer than average, or you answered this question and then you went back to that question. So we must remember to send you more info about that particular thing. Sure. Or we must customize the way in which we can serve you better. And so one of the examples that's really exciting is, although we are a non-advice business, so you must choose how much cover you want to buy for home insurance, we've built an AI tool which estimates for your profile how much contents you should have, how much contents we think you have. And so when you get your first quote, you answer a couple of questions and the quote pops up. We never asked you how much cover you want to buy. The first version of the quote that you see has a pre-populated default version, which is customized for you. Now, that version does not just use things like your age or your suburb or your credit score. It uses all of that, but it also uses a whole bunch of extra data that we've gathered from you. For example, that interaction data of whether how long did you take to type in this answer? Are you unsure about this? All that data we store, and we allow the AI to do its thing, to process that at massive scale, and to ultimately come up with something that I can't explain. I don't know why it suggested that you need 400,000 worth of cover, but that's the default thing that our system suggests. And so that AI we're really excited about, because one of the things that is unfortunate about the home insurance industry is that most people are underinsured. Mm. Most people buy cover, and then only when the insurer has to pay the claim do they come to your house and do the assessment. And then they tell you you didn't buy enough cover, and then they adjust it downwards and all sorts of things. We are trying to minimize that a lot. We are trying to move the majority of that, which traditional insurers do at the claim stage, to move that to the entry point. And when you buy your policy, to use AI as much as possible to help you review your cover and to challenge whether you've bought enough cover and to look at pictures and to have our AI look at pictures of your home and to say, but you only bought 30,000 Rand worth of electronics cover, but we see a 52-inch there, and we see that, like, what's going on? Like, to have our AI get better and better at proactively helping you buy the right cover, because that's ultimately what insurance is about.
Okay, I'm assuming something, the fact that the premiums, especially at traditional insurers, are so high, that's a lot of the reason why people aren't perhaps buying as much cover as they need to.
Yeah. And so we're excited that having removed a whole bunch of unnecessary costs from the system of selling insurance, our premiums are significantly lower for most people, so much so that many people look at it and they're like, this seems too good to be true. But that the reality is we've just removed a lot of costs. And that's why for most people, they are pleasantly surprised by how much they can save.
Great stuff. Just a couple more questions. First, it was just with regards to perhaps goals for the rest of 2020. This is essentially launched at the beginning of the year. Has Naked kind of set any guidelines or perhaps estimation in terms of how popular they want this product to be?
Mm.
Obviously, you want it to be as popular as possible.
Yeah, look, we've found a way of defining who we think is in our target market. Mm. Now, as I said earlier, that's not exclusively age. Age is one of the factors that plays a significant role. But basically, the kind of person that has used an online purchase, that has made an online purchase, the kind of person that regularly goes on Takealot or uses Uber or books their holidays online, that kind of person. So we found a way of articulating who those people are. We think it is a fairly large portion of the people of the insurance market fall into that category. And our goal for this year is that the majority of those people, so a large majority of those people, more than 70 or 80% of those people, needs to have tried out Naked Insurance before this year is finished. So it's ambitious, but we live in a really exciting era where you don't have to spend R1 billion on launching a new brand.
Sure.
The word of mouth that we've had over the last 18 months online and face-to-face has just been amazing. Like, just for us to spend very little money on advertising and to be something that a lot of people know about already, for us, if we expand our product, if we launch the full product now, and sure, we'll spend a little bit more money on marketing, but we certainly don't want to spend as much money as conventional insurers, because we feel that that's just bombarding the public with the same messages over and over, and that costs money. I mean that ultimately comes from your premium that you're paying if they're advertising that much. So we certainly want to find better, more innovative ways of getting the word out there. The core way of getting our product out there is that it must work.
Mm.
That people must love this thing so much. It must be so refreshing to see how it is quick and easy, saves me money, so convenient, it just works, that people must feel proud to help spread the word. And that's the main way we want to get the word out there. And as I said, our ambition is that the majority of people that fall into that bucket of tech comfortable, if you regard yourself as comfortable running portions of your life on tech, then you are part of that bucket. And the majority of those people need to have, if not bought, at least tried out Naked Insurance. It takes 90 seconds to do a quote.
Mm-hmm.
It really can't be any easier. And I want the majority of those people to at least have tried it out before the end of this year.
Great stuff. I think perhaps the last question I wanted to ask you, and this is perhaps something you won't be able to answer. Last year we saw two major players in digital banking space, one of which is an insurer. With Naked being in the digital space itself and really pushing the boundaries in that regard, is something like a banking solution something that Naked is thinking about or would ever think about?
Naked itself won't build a banking solution, that I can categorically say. Potential partnerships with other financial services providers is quite possible. Okay. It's quite possible. I'm excited about the future customer journey of researching things and buying things instantly online. And to the extent that you need finance or insurance, it should be very easily integrated. It should feel like one transaction.
Sure.
That is the vision that we believe in. And we are very likely to partner with some people on that journey.
Cool. Definitely keep our ears to the ground on that one.
Mm.
So thanks again to Ernst for chatting with us. I really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll have links to Naked Insurance at the bottom of the podcast, as well as a story regarding the new home insurance solution. Thanks again to Ernst.
Thanks so much.
Cool.
All right. That was very interesting. If you're looking for information or more information, we'll have links at the bottom. Thanks for the interview, Robin. It was really, really interesting. I'm excited to see Naked grow from strength to strength in the next decade.
It should be interesting. I think the AI-driven element is obviously one that grabs the headlines, but I think what is more interesting is that they use AI in a way to limit the amount of human interaction you're having with the actual insurance company. So Essentially everything is in your hands. You control a lot of the different elements and it is very user-friendly. So yeah, I think people that are, I guess, tech savvy will definitely get a lot of use out of such a platform.
Awesome. So moving on to something less adulty, I guess.
I was going to say the exact same thing. You can't believe it. I know people always say that, but I was going to say the same thing. I'm like, okay, that was a bit heavy. Let's do something. Let's do something that's not so impactful for your life. Let's talk about Pokemon. So over the last week, a lot of things have happened with the series that I want to just go through really quick because it's just weird. A lot of things are converging on the series right now. The first thing that happened is not a TV show, but an animated show nonetheless. There is something called Twilight Wings. Now, Twilight Wings is an animated show with each episode only being a few minutes, 6 minutes around. I'm just looking at the first episode that came out. And these are being put on the internet for free by Pokemon themselves as a series. One came out a few days ago, and we'll get one episode every month. And I believe there are a few episodes. I was just trying to find how many. I can't find right now, but there's a few episodes. We're going to be watching them for a while because they only come out once a month. And the animation is so beautiful. If you watch the anime, the main series anime, which this has nothing to do with, the quality of the animation here is much higher. And I assume that's what you get when you're not making, you know, one every week. This is one every month. The plot of Twilight Wings is just about a young boy who's in hospital. And all that really happens in the first episode, not to spoil it, because it's very short, is that he meets Chairman Rose. Now, if you haven't played the game, you have no idea who Chairman Rose is. You have no idea what the Galar region is, which the latest games take place in. That's the new region. You won't really have context, but I think you could still watch this. Though I don't know which Pokemon fans are going to be watching this and they haven't played the games yet. So I'll put a link to this below. Give it a watch. It's completely free on YouTube. It does have adverts, though. I have YouTube Premium, so I don't know how many adverts there are. I don't know how serious they are with that. But regardless, it's free to watch. It's on YouTube, which everybody already uses. And it's really nice that they're putting out such high-quality content on this. And the only thing I wanted to complain is that the Galar region is based on the UK and no one in the show has a British accent or a Scottish accent for that matter.
Not even a fake one.
No, not even a fake one. They all sound very American. Very
hello, governor.
Oh, I wish.
Oh, boy.
That'd be great. They even had like an equivalent of a taxi driver in the games and in the show, and he didn't even have a British accent. So that makes me sad.
Why?
Okay, let me keep talking. So Brendan got the other thing that's happening is that there's a new Pokemon movie, but not really. So in 1999, there was Pokemon, the first movie. It was very presumptuous of themselves to say it's the first movie, but now there's been like two dozen. And that movie is very beloved, even though a lot of people say it's not good. It made Mewtwo a fan favorite. There's a lot of Mewtwo that are really good. There was one American presidential candidate who once quoted Mewtwo, which is hilarious. And now they've remade that movie in 3D CGI. Now, anime fans have a big problem with this kind of art style. They really don't like it, but the movie's done. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it. And you will actually be able to watch it very easily because it's just coming to Netflix. It's not getting, right now, there's no word of a theatrical release. It's not going to be on big screens on 27th of February. It's just going to be there for everybody to watch. And it's just a bit strange because the announcement for this movie actually said, hey, when this was released in Japan, in Japanese theaters, it did really well. A lot of people went to see it. And then Pokemon, the first movie, was such a big movie event. I remember a lot of people talking about it, going to theaters and everything. So it's just weird that this movie has a legacy from, you know, more than 20 years ago, and it was successful in Japanese theaters, but they've kind of decided to put it on Netflix. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining because I know a lot of people hate the movies, and the movies are very expensive, and a lot of people already have a Netflix subscription, so they can just watch this. It's just very weird. A lot of people also have a problem with the characters, the character designs in this. They look a bit weird. Misty especially has eyes that are very far apart, where she looks kind of like an alien. And the mouths and noses of Brock and Ash look really bad. Take of that what you will. It looks interesting. I'll definitely be watching it when it comes out. Again, that is on Netflix, so it's not free like the last one, but you can give it a watch. And the final bit of Pokemon news we have isn't about Pokemon. There is a new game that just went into early access today, actually. It was the 21st in America, but for us it was early this morning. It's a game called Temtem. So Temtem, I don't know the exact words they use. I think they call it like a creature collection game. It's basically not a Pokemon clone, but it's very much Pokemon DNA. And it is by a Spanish developer, and it's actually being published by Humble Bundle. So for those who don't know, Humble Bundle has actually been behind a lot of games as the publisher. I don't know what they do in terms of funding these games, but they certainly do a lot in terms of helping promote them. And over the past month or so, Temtem has been doing, I think they call them stress tests, because this is an MMO. That's the big thing that separates Temtem from Pokemon, is that people have been asking for massively multiplayer elements in Pokemon for so long. And Game Freak is just coming around to it for one reason or another. So the small indie company is like, hey, we'll do it ourselves. Yes, Thanos meme and all that. So the game is in early access right now. From what I've read, I haven't had a chance to play it because I've been busy with a lot of things. From what I've read and what I've heard from people talking to me about it, they like the game so far. It does have some issues with connectivity. Some people don't like the designs of the Temtem as much as they like Pokemon. But as an overall package in this early access state, a lot of people are enjoying Temtem. It's not the best name. For me personally, I really hope this game is successful. You know, I've been a fan of Pokemon since it started. It's been two decades now. It really feels like Game Freak they've given up on pushing themselves and doing new stuff and trying to court new fans. They've kind of latched onto their formula, and they're just going to ride it out for as long as they can. When Sword and Shield came out late last year, I had a good time with it, but it just felt like more of the same. What I'm hoping for Temtem is that, in one hand, it's a really good game in its own right, And on the other hand, it's a really good game in terms of shaking up the landscape of the genre that Pokemon created, or it borrowed it from gacha games, but we won't talk about that now. So yeah, check out Temtem. It's a bit pricey. I think overseas it's actually $35. In South Africa, it's 200 Rand on Steam. And then on the Humble Store, you also have to pay $35 because they don't have regional pricing. But check it out if you want. I'm sure a lot of people are diehard Pokemon fans and they'll be willing to pay for a new kind of twist on these things.
So, Clinton, I just have one question.
Sure.
Do you think the developer of Temtem is going to get hit with copyright suits from the Pokemon company?
I don't think so, because as far as I know, you can't trademark game mechanics. You know, if that happened, the video game industry wouldn't exist. Every person who made a first-person shooter that looked like Doom would have been sued. Mm. There's nothing, as far as I can see from everything in this game, there's nothing that is exactly, I don't know how to say this in kind of legal terms, I don't think they will be sued, because it's not like they have a ball which they put the Temtems inside and that kind of looks like a Pokeball, right? They have, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a cool credit card. It's a glowing credit card. you can't, you know, catching creatures, Digimon has been doing that kind of, other series have been doing it. There's lots of turn-based RPGs in the world. There's thousands of turn-based creature RPGs. What I could see them getting in trouble with is the people, every time this comes up, people say, you know, you have to mention Pokemon to give some context to what this game is. I could see Nintendo getting irritated with that, but I really don't think there's any legal grounds. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I think Brendan's just asking me in terms of, do I think so from, you know, being fan of Pokemon for so long? I don't think so. You know, there's games that you see advertised on like Twitter and Instagram, which are clearly breaking the law, advertising their game to be like Pokemon. This isn't like that. It's just that, again, if you go back to Doom, first person shooters after Doom were called Doom clones, right? But after a while, we just started calling them first-person shooters. So maybe Temtem is going to be one of those games where when we look back at it in 10 years, we'll say, that wasn't a Pokemon-like. It was just a creature catching and battling game. I'm sure we'll come up with a more succinct name for the genre. But yeah, those are the three pieces of Pokemon news. You can check them out all below. You can watch Twilight Wings. You can check out Pokemon, the first movie remake, when it comes out in February. And give Temtem a look. It's getting positive reviews on Steam. Actually, I'm just loading Steam here to see what the reviews are. Oh, geez, it's actually really popular. It came out a few hours ago. It's already got 1,556 reviews, and overall, it's mostly positive. So, yeah, check that out. And that's going to be everything from me this week. You can see all of my stories on Pokemon. You can see all the stories everybody else mentioned down below.
Yeah. And that's going to do us for this week. Thank you for dropping by. And thank you to my co-hosts, Clinton Matos and Robin Chetty.
Anytime.
We'll chat to you all again next week.